We were chatting last week about just how we would hear from you this morning, and we came up with the idea of having a chat, and thank you for agreeing to do that. Already with the children, we have been reminded where you live, but as you'll see coming up on the screen, there's a picture, two pictures in a sense. The first one kind of places Malawi in the big world, and then the second one helps us to see where Ekwendeni is. Do you want to just give us a little bit of a flavour for the kind of place that Ekwendeni is? I mean, here in Northern Ireland, you know, people will say, oh, I come from the town, or I come from the city, or I live in the countryside. I mean, where does Ekwendeni fit into Malawi life in that way?
I think there's nothing that I can compare with, because when I call it a village, what you call a village here is more than a city in Malawi. So how shall I explain that you can understand what Ekwendeni is like? Ekwendeni is semi-urban. That's how we call it in Malawi. But then it doesn't look like your village. It doesn't look like your town. It's less than that, with less facilities than you may find in your village.
In Ekwendeni, there is what is called a mission station, mm-hmm. and there are a number of things on that. You live on the mission station, yeah?
Yes.
We have a few pictures here. I think the first picture, do you want to tell us what that is?
That's the hospital. Ekwendeni Hospital has about 200 and something beds, so it's quite a big hospital for us, and most of the times the beds are filled. And then people sleep on the floor in the hospital. So that's a hospital.
And the next picture?
Oh, that's my church. That's Ekwendeni Mission Church. It's more than 100 years now. It was built by the Scottish missionaries some time back. So that's my church. Like, maybe I'm there somewhere. I think so.
So we've got the hospital, the church, and then this next one, I think, are these folks in what's called the Lay Training Center, which is also a bit like a kind of, it would be a little bit like the school as well. It would all be part of the same kind of thing?
Yes, the Lay Training Center is a place where we train people. These are the youngsters who have not managed to go further with their education, but then we manage to train them in like tailoring or carpentry. So that's the Lay Training Center, so that they can have some sort of a skill that can equip them to have a better life at home.
And I suppose in some ways, historically, those three types of buildings reflect something of the understanding of mission.
Yeah.
You have healthcare, you have education, and you have the church.
Yeah.
And those three things, in a sense, addressing the whole person.
Yeah. The Livingstonia Synod believes in holistic mission. So when you deal with the spirit, you should deal with the physical needs as well as the psychosocial needs of a person.
Pat, so I'm interested to just know a little bit more about your own personal situation. And I think the next slide, is the market there, just in Ekwendeni. And I think the next picture takes us on to your family. Now, do you want to tell us who these people are?
Those are my children. The one on the far left, his name is Raswell. He's working somewhere and he's having his own family. He completed his education. The two girls below him is to the your left, your right, is Karabo. Karabo is 12 years old and she's in her final year primary school. And then Ellen to the right, to your left. And Ellen has just finished her secondary school education. She's 17. And next to Ellen is Tasiana. Tasiana has also just finished her secondary school education. Next to Tasiana is Bejson. It's a boy. He's also just finished his secondary education. And then Blessings. Blessings is in his secondary education. And then below there to your right is Beatrice. She has just finished her secondary education. And then we have Wezi and Limbani, they are both working. And then lastly we have Marwell, who just graduated, he's now working. So you can see I have four who have just finished their secondary education. Family planning didn't do very well.
To get in behind that a little bit, and Pat, so you explained to the children that in Malawi there are many, many children who are orphans, whose parents have died. And these children are children who you have welcomed into your life over the years, and they have become your family. These children are children who you've come to know through all kinds of different contexts. Many of whom whose original parents have died, and they have in a very real way become your family and your children.
Those are my real children. Mm-hmm. Because the youngest I got was 3 years. So they've grown up with me and they're my children. There's nothing else I can explain because they live in my house. I do everything for them and they know me as their mother and father. Mm-hmm. So I'm a mother who has had 10 children from 9 different fathers.
In Patso, we have a picture of you that is on our church website, and that picture highlights the fact that you're involved with the work of an organization called LISAP. LISAP has its offices in Ekwendeni, and there's a picture of those offices coming up now. Some folks here will be very familiar with what LISAP does. For others, this will be a new idea. Do you want to share with us what LISAP does?
Okay, LISAP, it's an abbreviation of Livingstonia Synod AIDS Program. We are a faith-based organization who are looking or dealing with HIV and AIDS in all aspects. So what we do is we implement and coordinate all HIV and AIDS work in the northern part of Malawi. We were formed in 1994, and we work in the northern region. We have 6 districts, but LISAP works in 5 of those, just because the other one is further on the lake, it's an island, so it's very difficult to get there. So we work in 5 of the 6 districts in the northern part of Malawi.
Okay, we're going to come back to the work at LISAP in a little minute, but just let me ask you one thing on the way through. From time to time, we have opportunity to actually send things to Malawi, as you know. For example, Nolene has spoken to us before about how boxes can be filled with different supplies, healthcare supplies, educational supplies, and other things have been able to be sent by container to Malawi. Whenever things arrive in Malawi, are they actually useful, the things that people from places like Ballyhenry send?
Let me say yes. Why? It's because Nolene gets in touch with me and asks me what I need. There are some things that are sent out there and you wonder, what are we going to use this for? But just because you know what we need out there, so all what is sent is very useful. So if we are talking of educational things, that means we can provide those stationary things to either schools or children directly. Or healthcare things, they go to the hospital. And some things go to the people in the community who use them in various ways. So the answer is yes, from Ballyhenry.
Let's go on to the next slide, because there's a slide again, just which again picks up about LISAP and begins to talk about the background. Do you want to speak to what's on that slide?
We're looking at our vision of LISAP. As you know that Malawi, there are many people who are living with HIV. So our vision is that we should have a society that has reduced the prevalence of HIV and AIDS, and also that is mitigating its impact through the care and support of the infected and affected. I'm saying the infected and the affected because every household in Malawi is either infected or affected with HIV, or both. You may be infected as well as affected. So that's the vision that we're looking at. So our mission is we implement and coordinate all HIV and AIDS activities in the CCP Synod of Livingstonia catchment area. What you have to take note here, we are a Presbyterian organization, but we are not an organization for Presbyterians.
That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
Say that
because
again.
We are a Presbyterian organization. CCP Synod of Livingstonia is Presbyterian, but we are not an organization for Presbyterians. So when we go out there in the community, whoever is affected or infected with HIV, we take care of them. So we don't go door to door asking, which church do you belong to? We can help you, we can't help you. No. Everybody. So at the same time, we empower people so that they should be able to understand what their problem is, so that they can initiate activities and sustain them as they go along, because we cannot continue doing the same things to same people. So that's why we empower them in the end that they can take care of themselves.
Next slide, again, just gives a little bit of an introduction to HIV. I mean, HIV in many ways has been on the radar. I mean, I remember first, you know, learning about AIDS in a high school class when I was a teenager. I mean, and that would have been kind of mid-1980s. I mean, that's really when AIDS and HIV began to come to people's awareness. Mm-hmm. Do you want to speak a little bit to that slide in terms of just giving us a little bit more of an introduction?
Okay. When we look at HIV, as you said, it has been there since the 80s. And during that time, mainly in the 90s, people were talking a lot about HIV. And then as we got on, people realized how devastating the infection has been. So there were a lot of resources that were put into trying to stop HIV or protect people from HIV. But as we go on now, all those resources are like going down. All those efforts are like waning, because now there are a lot of other things that are coming on the globe. We hear a lot of wars, we hear a lot of natural disasters and many other problems that are coming. So in essence, what the world is thinking is that HIV should be history. Well, what I'm thinking is that HIV should be a story that should be told. Because even though we are saying that we have been putting resources in the past 3 decades, we still have people who are living with HIV. Yeah.
Some statistics on the next slide.
Just to tell you what is happening at the moment, the first HIV person in Malawi was diagnosed in 1985. And by that time, there was like very few people. But then by 1994, when LISAP started, we had about 16.5%. I mean, 16 people out of 100 or 17 people out of 100 living with HIV. By 1999, we had about 23 out of every 100 people living with HIV. In 2004, it went down to about 12. And the last one was like in 2010, where we have about 11 people out of 100 living with HIV.
And of course, HIV doesn't just affect adults.
No.
Because there are many children living with HIV.
Yeah. Next slide, I think we'll be able to explain that. Yeah. So what that means is that at the moment in Malawi, we are having about 1,300,000 people living with HIV. And then if you look at the previous slides, it's where I'm saying the efforts are waning, but we still have 1,000,000+ people living with HIV. And out of those, we have 180,000 children living with HIV. And out of those 1.3 million people, it's only 56% who can be able to access antiretroviral drugs. That's a very few, small number. Which explains again later, as you look at the next sentence, that in Malawi at the moment, 46,000 people die annually due to AIDS. And that leaves us with about 1,100,000 orphans. And then some people die because of AIDS, some not. But out of 1.1 million, 800,000 children are orphaned just because their parents have died due to AIDS.
And roughly what's the population of Malawi?
It's about 15. The last census was 13 million.
So 13 million of a population.
Yeah.
And within that population, about 1.1 million orphans.
Yeah.
So 10% of the population are orphaned children.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go on to the next, what this means for Malawi. And again, we've touched a little bit on this.
Yeah, you know, I think just talking about the how many people are living with HIV, how many children are orphaned or whatever, I think it's not very much a reality to people back here. But to me, what I mean is that if we talk of 1,300,000 people living with HIV, I mean people, human beings. The people whom I live with, the people whom I touch, the people whom I work with, the people whom I live with every day, these are people who are having HIV. And these are the people who need to be cared for. When everybody, when every government, when whoever have the resources, think we've heard of HIV long enough, I think it's time we do other things. To me, I look at that human being who is in dire need of care and support from me. Because my work takes me out there to work with these people. And there I am, wanting to care for these people, wanting to support these people, but I don't manage to do that. So that's the reality that I face.
The next slide is entitled Action Needed, and that is something that you're involved in every day of the week through LISAP. Again, do you want to talk to us about those headings?
Yeah, because we're looking at the prevalence of HIV. As I'm talking, I said that 10.6 people are living with HIV. We want to prevent the spread of this HIV. We would not want the HIV to continue spreading. So prevention is the key that we need to have so that we don't have more people living with HIV, so that we don't have people dying with HIV, so that we don't have orphans who are out there because their parents are dead. And then we have people who are already living with the virus. We have orphans who are already there. We need to care and support them. And we need to provide treatment for them. And then if you look at the treatment, we are saying only 56% of these people can access antiretroviral drugs. What about the rest? What is happening to them? That's why we see many people dying because they don't get the care, support, and the treatment that they need. You know, I'll just share with you a bit the Uganda scenario. In Uganda, it had happened that it was one of the countries which was like high there in the prevention of HIV. Everybody was so happy of what happened in Uganda because they had controlled the virus so much. And people were not dying from the virus. And then what happened that the government started to relax. The churches started to relax. They said, we've been there. We've done it, and this is it. What happens now? Uganda is back on top. The infections are rising. So once you put your foot out of that pedal, you are in for a surprise that you have more people who are getting the infection or more people who are dying than you ever thought.
Sometimes talking about a particular place and even talking about particular people can bring this to life a little bit more. And I wanted at this stage to put a slide up of a particular place, a village. Is it called Usiska? Is that right?
Yeah, that's Usiska.
This is a village on the lake. One of the big features of Malawi is its beautiful lake that runs the length of the country. And this is a particular village where LISAP is active in terms of working. Is that right?
Yes, we work in Usiska. And Usiska is about 80 kilometers from Ikwendeni. So it's right on the lakeshore.
So if you look there, you can see all the houses that are kind of, they're mainly bunched around the water, the water's edge, and people living mm-hmm. there.
And it has about a population of about 8,000 people.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
In that small place.
In that small place, 8,000 people.
Some of those people are pictured in the next slide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As I said, Usiska has a population of about 8,000 people. But amongst those, we have 200 plus people, close to 300 people, who are living with HIV. And some of them are the children whom you can see there. Those are my family from Usiska.
The next picture is a picture of the road to Usiska. This is a vehicle. Is this one of the vehicles, a vehicle that would carry you around doing your work?
Yeah.
Enabling you to, because the journey there, and you can see the road, and the next slide gives us another picture of the road. This is a very difficult road to pass, yeah?
Yeah. It is a difficult road. As I said, it's 80 kilometers from Ikwendeni, but on a good day when it's not raining, it takes us 3 hours to reach Usiska.
So that's about 50 miles,
uh-huh.
and it takes you 3 hours
on a good day
to drive, not because of traffic, but simply because of the road.
The road. And as you can see, I remember the other time when we were going down to Sisia, my driver had to open the door, his door, to see where to put the wheel. Because if he missed it by an inch, we're down there in the drain. So that's the excitement of Sisia.
You were sharing with me how last year you had one particular visit that was, in its own way, particularly exciting. You'd set off for Usiska. You were taking nutritional food, which is a great help to people who have got HIV and in terms of helping them to fight the infection. And you got to a place where the supplies were just not able to go through because of the road. Is that right?
Yeah. The government was not able to send maize down to Usiska because the road was very bad. And I received a phone call from Usiska saying people are stopping taking their antiretroviral drugs because the drugs, the HIV drugs, you cannot take on an empty stomach. If you give them on an empty stomach, it's like take this and die. They are very strong, so people need to eat. So when I got this phone call that people are stopping to take the drugs, what I had to do is find means, and there wasn't even enough maize in the country, but we had to find means so that whatever we had to take it down to Usiska. But then when we phoned the transporters, everybody said, we've stopped going to Usiska because the road is very bad.
And are you the person that just at that point gives up and says we can't do anything?
No. Why should I? If I die, then that's the time I give up. But if I'm still alive, I'll find ways to deal with it. First of all, I phoned all the ADMAC depots, all the places where they sell maize, and somebody told me, one of the managers told me, we can only give you 50 bags of maize. I needed 300. So I said, if you cannot give me 300, then don't give me 50. You can have your maize. So in the end, they gave me what I needed. But then I couldn't take it down to Siska. The road was too bad. So what we did was to hire a truck, go around, find a boat, put the maize on the boat, and then take it down to Siska. And I risked coming by road.
And who is that carrying the maize off the boat?
I don't know her. Maybe it's Noreen. She's my twin sister.
That's you, yeah?
Yeah, that's me.
So with enough to do, you got the maize to Siska, you got the maize on board, and the next picture shows us those supplies now coming safely into the hands of the people in Siska, giving them the food in their stomach to allow them to take the antiretroviral drugs, helping them to combat HIV and AIDS.
Yeah, I think maybe people might not understand how important the food is. Before we started providing this food to Siska area, because Siska is very difficult. People cannot really grow maize because they are close to the lake and the soil is sandy. And on the other side, it's a hill. So it's very difficult for them to produce their own food. So what they rely on is to buy the food, and when the food reaches there, it's much more expensive than would normally buy in the other places. And most of them cannot afford to buy that food. So for us as LISAP, we took special interest to take care mainly of children living with HIV. We know there are adults who are living with HIV, but then we said children should be our priority. Before we started giving this food, to be modest, I'll say a child was dying every week.
That was in Siska.
In Siska. But then when we said, but why are these children dying? When we started providing food for these children, we started in 2009. To date, we've only lost two children. So that's why the food is so important. And the food is not like a four-course meal or a three-course meal. What we provide is maize, cooking oil, and beans if we can afford, depending on the money that we have. So that has changed the lives of these children.
A village where a child was dying every week.
Every week.
To a village where in the space of 5 years,
only
HIV AIDS has just claimed the lives of two children.
Of two children.
Let's, again, just as we move towards a close, let's focus this in on one particular individual. The picture's on the screen at the minute. Sorry, if we just go back. Picture's on the screen, and that girl is a girl called Varias, is that right?
Yeah.
Tell us about Varias.
We started with Varias just when we started in 2009. She was very sickly, having sores all over her body, and then they thought she was going to die. So we took her as one of our children who can care for during the time we go down to Siska. We have been providing food to Varias. And when we provide food, we also go with somebody who works in the hospital so that they can do a health assessment on the children. Now, 5 years down the line, the child whom they thought was going to die is still alive, and she's attending secondary school. And I remember the father he was not a Presbyterian. But when I went there in 2012, he said, I think I have to switch my church. Because other churches care for the soul, but some care for the soul and for the body. So he switched, he's now a Presbyterian. We didn't tell him to change, just because of what we did and what he saw in his child. Because the wife died a long time ago because of AIDS. And then he was caring for this girl, and he almost gave up. He thought Varias is going to die.
But the work, the work that you're involved in doing isn't just about bringing aid and relief to people.
No.
It's about more than that. And there's another picture then coming up, which, again, helps us to realize that. This is a girl beside you here in the picture who is known to us here in Ballyhenry. Again, do you want us to remind us who she is and what she has been doing?
Okay, this is Dorica Nkata. How happy she looks, eh? She's beautiful. Dorica is your child here in Ballyhenry. As LISAP, if you looked in our mission, we don't only care or we don't only support, but we empower. Because if somebody is empowered, they can be able to choose the destiny of their lives. So Dori Kankata was supported by Barry Henry. She has done her nursing course, and now she's working. This was during her graduation, so I'm just happy to be part of that.
So Dorica was supported through our mission support fund,
yeah,
and that has helped her to do her nurse training, and she's now working on another mission station in Malawi,
in Bangweni,
working in a hospital there.
Yeah, and now she's able to support her siblings.
Because she is working.
Yeah, she's okay. Working. So now it won't be a family whereby they're asking for help throughout their life. There's somebody in their family who is working and then is able to support the other siblings to go to school. Then in the end, they will work again, you know. So it's that type of cycle.
The final verse that's going to come up on the screen after that picture of Dorica. It says this, it says, "For we are God's workmanship, created in Christ Jesus to do good works, which God prepared in advance for us to do." Now, this is a verse that you mentioned to me a number of days ago. This is a verse that means a lot to you. Do you want to just share with us what this verse means to you and how it is an encouragement for you in your daily life and work?
I think when you've gone through the slides and you look at my work, you've looked at the road to Siska, you've looked at the different type of things that I do, you may think, is that worth it? And you may think, there are 1.3 million people in Patso living with HIV, 180,000 orphans in Malawi, children living with HIV. There are so many millions of orphans in Malawi. Why should you bother? But to me, I feel when I read this verse, Christ has created me for a purpose. I cannot care for everybody in Malawi. And even if it was only the 10 children that I have that I will care for, if I do the best in those, I would feel this is what God has created for me for. So sometimes the way can be so overwhelming, it can be so daunting, and you feel like, I don't need to continue with this. But then when you realize why God has created you, you feel, I can go on. Even if I help just a corner, a small corner of Malawi, even if I save only one person, even if it's only various who doesn't die, I'll still move on. Because God has created me for that. And I would want to go on with that. And I would want to care for them. Otherwise, there are a lot of discouraging things. And sometimes even the media makes it worse. And people, why should we help people? But to me, there is a reason why we should help. Because God himself has created us to help, to do the good works. He himself started doing the good work on us. Why not passing on that to others? If God decided today, I've stopped doing all the good things that I've been doing for Barry Henry, how would you feel? Oh no. But then, why not pass it on? So God wants to pass us to pass it on to others. Whatever small we can do, it counts in the eyes of God. So it encourages me. Even if they say the road to Siska is cut off, I'll say, let's start off. And if it's cut off, I can't really move, I'll walk. There are places that I've walked for 2 hours going to meet somebody whom I care for. And it's one of these children. So if you do it to one of these little ones, God sees it and he knows that he has created you to do that. That's why it encourages me.
And Patso, thank you so much.
This is just the introduction.